Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the global financial crisis right after this. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." And that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes, credit and credit cards, debt, usury. Well, in 1965, our Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And you know that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper versus gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew as a matter of law that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for you and I in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason. They knew, and they knew full well when they did it back in 1933, that in order to subjugate us, they would first have to take away our gold and silver coin so that they could take away our right to own property and to destroy those property rights. So if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we're going to have to first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home school. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free of charge. You can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now remember, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page. Hey, let's take a look at another newsletter here. It's called the World Affairs Brief, and it's put out by Joel Skousen in Utah. Mormon guy, and he's a fellow that's got his head on straight, and he puts out a pretty straightforward letter. I first got a copy of this a few months back, maybe a year ago now. One of my students up in northern Alberta sent me a copy, and then I read it, and I said, hey, that guy makes pretty good sense. Now, the thing that's good about the World Affairs Brief is that it has some economic information in it. But it's not an economic newsletter. Rather, it's a political and social newsletter. It's more of a news newsletter with a political and social bent. And it's refreshing, to say the least. And It's put out once a week, weekly email, printed edition. This is the October 29th edition, 2010. And the headline says that this week's analysis, rigging elections, how do they do it? Oil spill is still a big problem. More evidence of FBI agent provocateurs. WikiLeaks, Iraq abuse and secret CIA bases. Immunity for government wrongdoing. The truth about Justice Clarence Thomas and what has become of America. A social commentary on some of the subjects that I'm covering right here this week. For instance, yesterday I said, hey, our dilemma is unsustainable. And while this guy is a Mormon, he's not pushing Mormon theology. That's good. He's moral. Most Mormons are moral. You know, they don't practice adultery. No, some probably do, but you know, as a general rule, they're not out here practicing adultery. And most Mormons are pretty conservative. Utah is a pretty red state. We can take a look at conservative politics. And the fact that he's not pushing his religion, he's not trying to get you converted to Mormonism, and he's an American. He's a Marine officer. He's out of the Marines now. I think he was a major. I think he was a fighter pilot. The name Skousen should bring up some memories. His father, or grandfather, one or the other, was an FBI agent. And he's pretty well connected with the intelligence and the military establishment. And every week, you know, he's got access to pretty good information that people like you and I just don't have information about. And this is the kind of information that I've mentioned before you're not going to get from Katie Couric and Brian Williams or ABC News. That just isn't going to happen. And he blows the whistle on a lot of the chicanery that's going on around us, which gives us, that's you and I, the bottom feeders here, an opportunity to prepare to do something more intelligent for ourselves. And so, for that reason, I want to recommend the World Affairs Brief. Now, I don't know how to get on to it. I mean, it comes in here every week, and I guess I ought to look this up and find out, hey, where does this thing come from? But I think if you did a search, you know, just go to one of the search engines and plug in the name Joel M. Skousen. Joel M. Skousen, J-O-E-L, S-K-O-U-S-E-N, Joel Skousen. And put in World Affairs Brief. That's the title of the newsletter. Commentary and Insights on a Troubled World. In other words, that's the heading that he puts on here. But I don't see the internet connection or his email address or anything like that on here. Although it may be in here and I just haven't seen it. Well, listen to this. He starts off by talking about rigging elections. Now, Joe Stalin pointed this out. In Russia, when they have an election, 99% of the people vote. Evidently, it's the law. And I guess they punish you if you don't go out and vote. Now, do you really believe that Russia is a democratic country? I mean, these people were voting 99% would go to the polls and vote when Joe Stalin was running the country. Did you think that Russia was a democracy or a democratic country when Joe Stalin was running the show? All right. Now, with that kind of foolishness out of our minds, we Americans over here believe in voting. You know, voting is a part and parcel with the American process. Now, I've been looking at politics, you know, for the last 50 years, and I can tell you from my historical reading, the elections in this country have been skewered from George Washington forward. There are always people out there that are trying to influence the outcome of the election, whether it's in your local precinct, or if it's in your county, or if it's in your state, or it's at the national level. They've got people out here like Acorn registering people to vote that are dead and in the graveyard. They're registering people to vote who aren't even citizens of the United States. And I'm not just picking on Acorn Hill, I'm picking on all kinds of groups and organizations out here that cheat. We're not interested in holding a referendum on a subject. And let's all go and let's give our opinion in our vote, and then let's count that up and see what most of us are thinking. That's fair. That's honest. And so what we do is we create a system, and then the powers that be accentuate the system so that they can control the elections. Maybe they can't control the national election, but you saw what happened in Florida with George Bush. And you all said, hey, that's a stolen election. Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure whether he stole the election in 2004, but it appears that he did in Ohio. You see, you have to have Florida and Ohio to win the national election. So, you know, I'll just leave it up to you. You can sit there and you can figure it out for yourself. But Joel Skousen takes this issue on and gives us some insight into the election process. Now listen to the story. Rigging elections, here's how they do it. Next week's election has dozens of races that are too close to call, and none are more symbolic and important than Republican and Tea Party challenges to the Democratic leaders of both the House and Senate. Senator Harry Reid's election is in serious doubt in Nevada, and Representative Nancy Pelosi is also at risk. Well, this week's early voting in Nevada has already produced a glimpse into the presence of electronic voting and the irregularities, the glitches that are indicative of underlying coding that allows sophisticated hackers to alter the results just enough to tilt the votes in favor of a losing candidate. As Joseph Stalin once said, it's not the people who vote that matter, it's the people who count the votes that matter. The way I heard the quote, it was, it's not the people who vote that counts, it's the people who count the votes that counts. Old Joe had the right idea there. As we pointed out in the last week's brief, the programming for a new online voting program had flaws that could be hacked and manipulated to alter the results. So while the press focuses on amateur hackers, the real problem is government employing programmers to manipulate the results. Now, Fox News detailed some of the complaints that were occurring in Nevada, where both the Democrats and Republicans are heavy and heavily controlled by the establishment, and they have a history of intervening to control votes. Some voters in Boulder City complained on Monday that their ballot had been cast before they went to the polls, raising questions about Clark County's electronic voting machines. Voter Joyce Ferreira said when they went to vote for Republican Sharon Engel, her Democratic opponent, Senator Harry Reid's name was already checked. Ferreira said she wasn't alone in her voting experience. She said her husband and several others voting at the same time all had the same thing happen. Clark County Registrar of Voters Larry Lomax said there is no voter fraud, and claims that machines were altered in any way were patently false. And he said at no time did any of those voters report the incident to staff at their polling location. See, I don't know that either, but that's pretty typical, pretty standard. Now, you'll notice here in the United States that the powers that be are just fighting tooth and toenail here. They do not want a paper ballot. They don't want any paper records. So that, like in Florida, for instance, you know, you could go back and you could check these people's votes. I'm not opposed to computers. But, you know, why don't we have a computer just like we do when we go to the grocery store, for instance? You go into Walmart and you can swipe your card. And you can pay online. You can write a check. You can do all these things. But in the final analysis, the cash register puts out a tape, and it has a list on there of everything that you bought and the prices and the final amount, and you walk out with a paper record, don't you? All right. Now, Walmart is not the, you know, the pinnacle of honesty. I mean, Walmart's about as crooked as a dog's hind leg. My wife, hardly any time she goes over there, she can't catch them cheating. I'll bet you my wife can count Walmart cheating every time. Every time she goes in there, she'll catch them cheating. And that's when she's trying hard. You know, ordinarily we don't, but... Now, why can't you then have a paper receipt? And Walmart keeps a copy of that transaction on a tape coming right out of that register. Now, you can't tell me that we can't have a computer that gives you a receipt for who you voted for. And then gives or holds a paper receipt in the register, in the computer, so that if we get a close election and we need to recount these, we got everybody's vote right here written down on paper. We go double check it. No, sir, by God, they're not going to have that. And Skousen is reporting on that. Now, I don't vote for other reasons, but even if I did vote, I'd quit. There isn't any need. There's no point. The election of Harry Reid was already preordained. It didn't make any difference who was running against Harry Reid. When it was all said and done, the powers that be had already decreed that Harry Reid was going to be the senator, because he's the Senate leader. And Skousen had pointed that out, you know, before the election. And sure enough, right after the election, Harry Reid won just by a couple of percentage points. Nothing big, no big landslide. But when you poll people, they have exit polls. And the exit polls are very, very accurate. Very accurate. And when they did the exit polls, Sharon Ingalls should have won the election by 4 or 5 percentage points. But when it was all said and done, Harry Reid won the election by 2 or 3. See how that works? And Skousen explains in this article how they do it. They do it with the computers. They're already programmed. It's just like going in playing a slot machine. You know, you people think that when you go in to play a slot machine, that there's some luck involved. Zero luck. None. Doesn't have anything to do with the equation. That machine is designed to pay out a certain amount. It pays out 35%. No, it pays out 65%. Take that back. It pays out 65% of every dollar put into it. You put $100 in it, and it'll give you back 65. You put in $500, and it'll give you back 65%. And the house makes 35%. Now, you know, you can change those a little bit if you want. You know, you can go 25-75 or 95-5 if you want. But the moral to the story is it's already pre-programmed. And these elections are pre-programmed. I mean, if you think that you're going out and doing a great public service, you know, get after it. I don't want to discourage you from voting. I mean, after all, that's a part and parcel with Americana, you know. But it's not gonna make the election. If you voted for Harry Reid in Nevada, you voted for the winner. And if you voted for Sharon Engel, you got screwed. But it was programmed to be that way anyway, and it wouldn't have made any difference whether you came out and voted or didn't vote. It would have come out that way if nobody had voted. 54% of the people, or 52%, would have voted for Reid, and they would have phonied it up. All right, now, in order to get behind that, you know, sometimes you'll see the mainstream press say, well, there were some complaints about voter irregularities. Then Jim Lehrer will bring one guy in, he says, no voter irregularities, computers are the greatest thing since sliced white bread. They bring another guy in, he says it's as phony as a $3 bill. But when you get through, you haven't got a clue as to what in the hell's going on. because they want to present this, you know, in an even-handed fashion. Well, with the newsletters, the newsletter writer comes out and he says, well, let me tell you what's going on here. Here's the way this thing works out. That's why I reported to you here a couple of programs back. I said, well, here's what happened up in North Korea. What happened in North Korea was the same thing that happened at Pearl Harbor. You know? And we already know what's going on here and how this is coming down. And we're going to tweak this a little bit, and we'll see if we can't promote some North Korean response. And sure enough, we did. Just like, hey, we'll tweak this a little bit and see if we can't get some Japanese response. And sure enough, you did. Hey, those Japs, they responded there at Pearl Harbor just like you figured they would when you shut their oil off in Indonesia in 1937. So I'm not surprised that the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. I'm surprised that they waited so long. I don't know why it took them 5 years to do what an act of war is. What do you think would happen if Russia put an embargo on oil shipments from Venezuela to the United States? Oh, my God. That wouldn't fly for a week. That dog don't hunt. Bottom line. But we did it to the Japanese in 1937, we in the Dutch in Indonesia. And the Japs, you know, they went around that for about 4 or 5 years. They tried to stay out of this United States thing. I think they could figure out where that might lead, but then finally they said, well, enough's enough, so let's get after it. Now, had we known that in advance, had we known that, would we have voted Roosevelt back into office in 1940? Say, I don't know, maybe. But if you'd have voted Roosevelt out of office, you probably could have kept America out of World War II. Now, that would have altered international geopolitics. That would have altered world affairs, no doubt about it. Now, the courts are also trying to help skew the vote by the registration process. Another incredibly bad ruling came down in Arizona this week. Dylan Smith of the Tucson Sentinel reports an Arizona law requiring proof of citizenship to register to vote was struck down Tuesday by a federal appeals court because it conflicts with the U.S. National Voter Registration Act. The case is called Gonzalez versus Arizona. And it was decided 2-1 by a 3-judge panel that included former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, still called in to work on issues critical to the powers that be. She's an insider. O'Connor was joined by Circuit Judge Sandra Ikudu, while Chief Judge Alex Kaczynski dissented on the decision to not require proof of citizenship. The court upheld the requirement to show identification at the polls. The latter was a token allowance, considering that many people who are not citizens and who are not eligible to vote already have driver's licenses. You know, so here you are. You know, our Constitution says only citizens can vote here in the United States. Well, now, in Arizona, in order to change things around, we got a lot of illegal aliens, don't we? We don't know exactly how many, but a bunch. We'd like to get those illegal aliens to vote. And they can't vote because they have to show identification because the state law requires that. So what we need to do is to change that law, don't we? So we strike it down as unconstitutional. Now, it would seem logical to me. Now, I don't know if it does to you or not, but it would seem pretty logical to me. And I think that I would be in favor of, if I was the power that be, I'm going to run an election here. And we only want citizens to vote. We don't want everybody to vote here. Just citizens. Now, it used to be in the United States, the only people that could vote were landowners. So you had to come in to show that you were a landowner in order to register to vote. Then you'd have to come in and show that you were the voter, in fact, that owned the land in order to cast your ballot. Now, that was in the olden days, and then since then we've changed things, and we said, well, we want people who are citizens to vote, whether they own land or not. And so now it would seem pretty logical to me that you need to have some way to show that, well, I'm a citizen. Here's my citizenship. Here's my registration or whatever. But no, sir, you don't have to do that. So I'll leave it up to you. You know, you can figure out what the conclusion to that's going to be. But you didn't see that reported on the 6 o'clock news by ABC, CBS, or NBC. They don't tell you that. Then he talks about some significant races, but one of them over here deals with what he calls the lying factor. And on this lying factor, he says this. Of course, there isn't enough room to catalog all of the lies of the candidates who are vying for public office, especially the incumbents. But here's a great example of lying by an incumbent. Nancy Pelosi, claiming there will be no new debt during her tenure. Well, Terrence Jeffrey points out that when Representative Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, gave her inaugural address as the new Speaker of the House in 2007, Speaker Pelosi vowed that there would be no new deficit spending. Now, since that day, the national debt has increased by $5 trillion, according to the U.S. Treasury Department. So after years of historic deficits, this 110th Congress will commit itself to a higher standard. Pay as you go. No new deficit spending, Pelosi said in her speech from the Speaker's podium. Our new America, she said, will provide unlimited opportunity for future generations, not burden them with mountains of debt. One of many lies that are typical of politicians who pander to what's right, but then blatantly disregard right from wrong when they're actually elected to office. Now, just as bad was Tim Gaither's claim this week that, quote, we will not do it. He was referring to inflating the dollar. Oh, really now? Can he really say this with a straight face? Doug Horning, senior editor of Casey Research, has the story. Quote, Gaither was speaking ahead of this weekend's meeting of the G20 finance leaders in South Korea, at which currency issues are, well, likely to be discussed. Addressing the Commonwealth Club of California in Silicon Valley, the government's money man did not mince his words, no sir. He said, quote, it is very important for people to understand that the United States of America and no country around the world can devalue its way to prosperity to be competitive, unquote. And Gaither solemnly swore, and he added, quote, it is not a viable, feasible strategy and we will not engage in it, unquote. Now, this was a pretty big step for Tiny Tim to take. He was perhaps, understandably, reluctant to sound the alarm for the strong dollar in public and has not done so since February. Of course, no one believed him. That has led many countries to complain that Fed money creation is actually weakening the dollar, causing more funds to flow into their markets, and then pushing up the local medium of exchange. No one, it appears, wants a strong currency at this point in time. Well, except the United States. Washington to the rescue. The U.S., Gaither swore, will work hard to restore confidence in the strong dollar. Which side of that bet do you want to take? Strong dollar or weak? Indeed. Now, new news factors in elections. We all know the mainstream news is biased towards government power and biased toward its globalist intervention agenda. It's a major factor in controlling public perception during elections. Fewer still realize that the presumed conservative Fox News channel is also controlled by the powers that be, but in a very different way. The owner, globalist Rupert Murdoch, is no conservative. His prime commentators, with the exception of Glenn Beck, are trying to steer conservatives toward controlled Republican candidates like Newt Gingrich and Mike Huckabee. National Public Radio claims to be neutral, but National Public Radio is very liberal. However, in the wake of the firing of NPR's Juan Williams for stating his sincere fear about being on an airplane when Muslim men in Muslim garb get on board, we have another chance to scrutinize public funding of the news, which should stop, including the government subsidies to individual public radio stations. Well, it turns out that NPR CEO Vivian Schiller is behind the push to have government eventually take over and control all of the news. Tara Servatius of townhall.com explains, quote, as Schiller explained in a speech to the NPR board of directors in 2009, it is public radio's responsibility to fill the gap in journalism left by dying local television stations and newspapers. Schiller is a former New York Times executive. She is one of a few dozen power players working with the Federal Communications Commission, the Federal Trade Commission, and a leftist group called the Free Press to Reinvent Journalism. And she is promoting a plan to take over local news coverage from for-profit television, radio, and print media, which Schiller and her friends claim is in danger of extinction, which is very true. These friends get together regularly with the heads of the FCC and the FTC to brainstorm the details in government and congressional hearings. These meetings include the leaders of all of the country's public broadcasting outlets, including PBS, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and American Public Media. Another conspiracy afoot? Well, it certainly looks that way. Now, there's a little flavor of the Joel Skousen newsletter. We'll be back with more, but let me give you a mid-course reminder that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School. That is, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the global financial crisis. I gave you an introduction here to Joel Skousen's newsletter. It's called World Affairs Brief. I don't have the exact internet connection here to give your address, but if you'll do a Google search, I'm sure that you can find Joel Skousen, spelled S-K-O-U-S-E-N. World Affairs Brief is the title of the document. Comes out every week. I don't know what the subscription rate is. I'm going to guess $100 a year, something like that. And it's about 10 pages a week. Let me see how many pages are on this. Oh, it doesn't have page numbers. Well, just looking at it here. 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 pages. It'll run 7 to 10 pages with articles just like that to give you a flavor of what the hell's going on in the world. Now, let me give you another source of information. This one here is the one I rank number one. I don't want to take anything away from Skousen or anybody else, but I got to tell you that this guy, Bob Chapman, he's kind of in a class all by himself. And I'm going to go ahead and say that I think the International Forecaster, as a newsletter, is probably in a class all by itself. First of all, the size and scope of it is in a class by itself. I'm looking at this one here. This issue here, I'm going to look at the last page. It's page 20. This is a small one. They vary in size every week. Kind of depends on how much news, and, you know, what's going on and what Chapman wants to say. But they run as high as 40 pages. Comes out twice a week. It's not uncommon to get a 40-page issue of the Forecaster. And 20 is a small one. 30, I'm going to guess, you know, 25 to 30 pages is about average. 35 pages is a little big. 40 is, you know, an extreme. And 20 pages is an extreme. I don't think he puts out anything under 20 pages, but that puts it in a class by itself. Then the number, it's twice a week, year-round. That's 100 issues. And boy, that puts it in a class all by itself. Now, he's a conservative newsletter writer. He's an economist. He's a stockbroker. He's in a class by himself in that you actually have to know a little something to read his newsletter. You know, not all of it, but on the economic reports, I mean, he uses terms, and we'll see a few of them here as we get into this, like QE3 and QE2 and the Fed and Fed policy, HSBC, JP Morgan, MBA, Citigroup. In other words, this is an economics newsletter written for economists and bankers and people that are into economics. Now, the thing that puts it in a class by itself in a third realm over here is that it is not exclusively a news financial letter. It's like Skousen, there's political commentary, there's exposés, there's health. He's got a health section, you know, nearly every week in here. Where do you buy subsistence and survival foods? Where do you cash in gold and silver? It's just, you know, it's just in a class by itself. And so that's why I'm going to rank it number one, not to take anything away from anybody else. He starts off every week. It's published on Wednesday and Saturday. Wednesday and Saturday. U.S. Markets. That's page one. U.S. Markets. Here's a little flavor of the way it goes. He says, there's no question that the world is at a boil. Germany is drawing anger. North Korea has attacked South Korea. Flayed about the Fed's Mr. Bernanke blames China for America's bad or sad economic and financial dilemma. Five suits, class action suits, and one RICO have been filed against J.P. Morgan Chase and HSBC for having manipulated silver prices, and class actions are rumored to be in the process for naked shorting, which has been rampant in the market for years. A felony hedge fund investigation of insider trading with the SEC has absolutely refused to pursue. Now, let me pause right here and point out my complaint. I don't know what HSBC is. It's some kind of a bank or institution, but I can't tell you what it is. Notice he says SEC. Well, that's the Securities and Exchange Commission, but he doesn't explain that. It just says, which the SEC has absolutely refused to pursue. Now, the fled about the or flaying about the Fed's Mr. Bernanke blames China. Well, I know that the Fed is the Federal Reserve System, but if you didn't know that and you were reading this newsletter, you run into some problems here with HSBC, SEC, and FED. QE2, QE3, QE1. These acronyms that are used, I understand most of them, but not all of them. Which is why I tell you, the privateer, now, he's a better teacher. He takes the time, when he writes SEC, he will put in parentheses, Security and Exchange Commission. If he were to write this HSBC, he would spell out for you what the HSBC is. And I'm unable to do that for you because I don't know what HSBC stands for. How do you like that? Now, I still read his newsletter, and I can tell you that's another bank of some kind of a financial institution. I can read that in the context. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I could find them on the internet or in the telephone book. Well, he goes on and he says, now, the United States is still occupying Iraq and has a war raging in Afghanistan to protect the opium and the marijuana crops, the largest in the world, which generate $300 billion a year in profits. That's quite a statement of him by itself. The United States is still occupying Iraq and has a war raging in Afghanistan. What's the war raging in Afghanistan for? It's to protect the opium and marijuana crops, which are the largest opium and marijuana crops in the world. And to back this up, to give you a little flavor for how this works, the people that were running Afghanistan at the time the trade towers were knocked down, well, they're called the Taliban. It's a political party or organization over in Afghanistan. And the Taliban, they're religious guys, they're Muslims and they're religious guys, and they're opposed to the growing of poppies and the making of heroin. I know it's kind of crazy. You know, it's where the money's at. See? But religiously, see, they're opposed to that. Like religious people here in America are opposed to drugs. Well, that's kind of hypocrisy. You know, these same people that go to church every Sunday and tell you that they're opposed to drugs. Well, you know, they're taking penicillin, they're taking drugs that they get down here at Rexall. They're just opposed to the street drugs that you're buying from Joe down on the street corner, which are produced in Afghanistan. So the United States goes over there under under the auspices of a totally different reason. We're not over there promoting drugs or knocking them out. We're over there to get Osama bin Laden and to get those dirty guys that knocked our trade towers down in New York, which subsequently we found out were knocked down by our own CIA, and it was an inside black flag job. Sorry. But we're over there to make the world safe for democracy and to give them Afghanis an opportunity to practice democracy. Well, the Taliban had this poppy thing just about knocked out. I mean, Afghanistan, which in years before used to be the number one producer of heroin, had gone down to about number 99, about the lowest producer. They just about stamped it out. The United States comes in there, throws the Taliban out, and in 2006, Afghanistan produced the biggest crop of heroin and heroin poppies ever produced in their history. 2007 produced an even bigger crop. 2008 even bigger. 2009's even bigger yet. Now, why are we getting all of these bumper crops of heroin? And the United States is over there with helicopters and Apache helicopters and 150,000 soldiers, and by God, we're going to stamp out drugs. But we just can't quite get it done. We're just working our hearts out, trying to get these drugs eradicated. I would say turn the job of drug eradication back over to the Taliban. The ragheads running around, you know, in Toyota pickups with AK-47s. They didn't have any helicopters. They didn't have any satellites in the sky. They didn't have any GPS. They didn't have any money. But whatever the hell they were doing, they stamped out heroin. So now when you pick up the forecaster and you read a line here, the U.S. is still occupying Iraq, has a war raging in Afghanistan to protect the opium and marijuana crops, the largest in the world, which generate $300 billion a year in profit. You know, all of a sudden, now you got your finger on the pulse of reality. That's what's going on. Now they told us, you know, we're over here in Iraq, you know, trying to make Iraq safe for democracy. No, no, no. We're not in Iraq to make Iraq safe for democracy. We don't give a rat's ass what kind of government they have. What we care about is that 25% of the world's oil, which now we have, by the way. We got it. Fair and square. Took it away from you. Just went over there and took it away. Now, they objected. You know, they got kind of uppity about it, blowing themselves up in the marketplace and one thing and another. But, you know, now that the war is over and we've come to a conclusion there, of course, we're going to continue to occupy Iraq just like we did Korea. See, they got these stories, you know, to make us feel good. They say, well, now we're going to withdraw from Iraq, and they made a big scene. Here, see, we've withdrawn from Iraq. We got 50,000 troops in Iraq, 30,000 in South Korea. We've had 30,000 troops in South Korea for 60 years. And we're going to have 50,000 troops if we can, 50,000 troops in Iraq for the next 60 years. Or until the oil runs out, one or the other. When the oil runs out, we won't have any need for it. Now, socialists, having recently relinquished power in the U.S. House of Representatives, are calling Republicans an axis of depression. The socialist, what they cannot control, they attempt to destroy. It reminds us of Italy's communists. The new Fed policy of QE2 is considered by U.S. detractors to be a step too far. The Fed has entered the inner sanctum of realm of no return. If QE2 and a hidden QE3 doesn't work, then the monetary game is over. The Fed is in a desperate position, and instead of letting depression take its course, the groundwork of which was caused by the Fed, Wall Street, and banking, it is again rolling the dice intent on extending and buying time. If the Fed and its owners refuse to bite the bullet, great inflation will ensue, dependent on the size of QE2. It's almost poetry, isn't it? If it were to stay at $600 billion, inflation would increase. If the Fed is forced to increase the injection to more than $2 trillion, there will be far more inflation. Unfortunately, we cannot depend upon government statistics because government has a track record and a propensity for masking the truth. There are those that believe that this is a monetary experiment, but I can tell you that it is not. What we are seeing has been tried in different forms for hundreds of years, quite unsuccessfully, I might add. And as a result, to thinking people, the Fed and Mr. Bernanke have lost most of their credibility, and that view is justified. Mr. Bernanke's recent reference to rebalancing the global economy is just another effort to justify current monetary policy. What Mr. Bernanke is really advocating is a world balancing where countries with surpluses use those funds to assist those with deficits. He wants a global village where interests of individual countries must reflect the interests of the global economy as a whole. And, of course, nowhere to be found is sovereignty in this planned redistribution of assets. Now, this is the same goop that Treasury Secretary Geithner fed us at the G20 meeting. The concept of let's all go bankrupt together, utopianism at its finest. Fortunately, in both cases, the concept of global rebalancing went over like a lead balloon. Any honest economist knows this is a rehash of flawed policy. And when government and the Fed abandoned the gold reserve standard on August the 15th, 1971, they knew where all of this was going to end up. But they did it anyway. In their march toward a world financial order and a world government. Now, after that historic date, there would be no return to sound money until the system was totally purged. Now, we have heard the call for almost 40 years now of this amalgamation of nations for the interest of all. Individual countries must sacrifice their interests for the entire global economy. This is why the Fed has deliberately accommodated monetary excesses since then. Now, we have written about this embarrassment of planned destruction for more than 45 years now, and until recently our thoughts were ignored. But thanks to talk radio and the internet, that reaches the entire world now, we're finding that more and more people are waking up to the truth. And since the 1980s, we have had one fiscal and monetary crisis, one after another. And now that the world is beginning to discover what Europe and the United States have been up to for all of these many years, these internationalists now find themselves in deep trouble. And their real problem is too many people know now what they are up to, and what they have been doing. China just injected $2.3 trillion into their economy to spur domestic demand and to create jobs. The result has been funds flowing into their stock market, real estate, and general financial sector, which has created a misallocation of funds and leaping inflation. Bank set asides were just raised, but that has happened a little too late to escape some very major damage. The Chinese are traveling to Hong Kong from the mainland to shop because the cost of goods is 10 to 95% cheaper in Hong Kong than it is on the Chinese mainland. The Chinese obviously went along with U.S. ideas to inflate domestic demand by stimulating their economy so that consumption and imports would rise. So we see China is having some of the same problems that the United States is having today. So the Chinese, then, to add a little editorial comment here, are doing the same thing that we're doing here in the United States with this thing called quantitative easing. It's a race to the bottom. We're all inflating our currency. This is, in reality, a currency war. It's a trade war. It isn't declared yet. Everybody is saying, oh, no, no, we're maintaining a strong dollar. We're maintaining a strong euro. Behind the scenes, where reality really lurks, we find just the opposite is going on. Like our politicians, they come to us and they say, no new deficits. We're going to balance the budget. We're going to get our spending under control. And then when they go out and actually take office, you know, after you vote them in, you listen to them. You said, well, that's what I'd like to do. President Obama, you know, he says, we're going to have change. You know, we'll change this. This George Bush, he's just over here spending us into debt. We want change. Well, the people of America said, well, by God, that's what we want. And they voted the Republicans out and the Democrats in. So then the Democrats, they went to work to spend more than the Republicans. And then to give you national socialized medicine on top of it. Now the people are ticked off, and so now they voted out one house of them. And maybe in the next election they'll do the same to the Senate. But meanwhile, back on the farm, you can expect more spending and more deficits. More of the same. It doesn't really make any difference here whether you vote in the Republicans or the Democrats, you're going to get more of the same. And you don't even have to go down and vote to do it because they've already got the voting machine scoped out. They got those things set up. See where this is heading? All right, it's unsustainable. These boys have an agenda. Their agenda was to take over and hijack the world's economy, the world's political system, and to create a new world order and a one world government. And they're just about there. And furthermore, the creator of the universe says they're going to succeed. So you can forget about stopping them. You got God himself working against you if you think you're going to stop them. That's part of his plan. He says he's going to use these clowns to destroy us. I want to remind you to go back to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. All you're dealing with here is he's using Republicans, Democrats, and communists to affect his own personal agenda. That's God, the Creator. He, too, has an agenda. And we haven't been paying attention to the Creator's agenda. Now, for us little guys down here at the bottom of the pond, we need to have Bob Chapman, Joel Skousen, Franklin Sanders, and William Buckler to tell us what the hell's going on behind the scenes so that we can zig when they zag, and then we can zag when they zig. I'm about out of time again, so let me give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week and has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.